All right, the next edition of our season preview series. This is Kevin O'Connor with the Boston Celtics. Kevin, what's up?
How's it going, Nate? Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, one artifact of the fact that this is now, like, we're well into the 20s on these podcasts is I'm just done with doing some special, different intro. I just want to get started.
I don't blame you, Nate. You're hard at work this month heading up to the season.
Yeah, it's been an interesting experience recording like two podcasts a day. I'm pretty much like I've eliminated my entire quotient of talking for the day. I just like don't talk to anyone else throughout the rest of the day.
Sit back and watch TV the rest of the day. Watch some film.
Exactly. So, all right, the Boston Celtics, a team that on the surface has no star talent, but also doesn't really have any weaknesses. I think some of the advanced numbers seem to like them more than the conventional wisdom, and I think maybe part of that is because of how well they played after the Isaiah Thomas trade last year.
Yeah, that's for sure. It seems like every model has the Celtics winning in the high 40s, or even I think one yesterday had 54 wins for the Celtics. And you're right.
Who was that? I didn't see that.
Might have been Kevin Ferragan. I'm not 100% sure. But
okay. Oh, yeah. They, like, the ones that are like more purely RPM-based
yes.
seem to like really like them a lot because, yeah, they don't really have anyone who is bad by that metric. So
exactly. And I think you're right, though. It's partially because of how they performed after the All-Star break, after acquiring Isaiah Thomas. They finished 2011. They were 14-7 in the games Isaiah Thomas played. And that includes some games after he had a back injury where he wasn't really himself. But the fact is, the Celtics had a top 8 net rating after the break. They had a top 8 defensive rating after the break. So they really stepped up on both ends of the floor, largely due to Isaiah Thomas. But also, I think, because of Jay Crowder. In my opinion, the Jeff Green trade from early January was the turning point. And because it opened more minutes for Crowder, it opened more minutes for Jarepko, and that allowed the Celtics to switch defensively. And plus, Crowder just really infused a dirty, grinding attitude into the team. That's something that Jeff Green really didn't do.
Yes, he is not, in fact, legendary for those things. And gosh, that trade was just such a steal. Even if they had only gotten Crowder, and that's it, in that Rondo trade, it would have been great. And it's so funny, too, that the overwhelming reaction was, I can't believe that's all they got from Rondo. And now, too, with Dallas not exactly looking like a juggernaut this year, they could end up getting, you know, the number 11 pick or something from that trade as well. That really ended up being a coup. I think, what was your opinion of the trade at the time? I thought it was great that they even managed to get as much for him as they did.
Yeah, I think I was one of the people who wanted them to trade Rondo last year, and that's because I just didn't think he was a great fit for what the Celtics, or especially what Brad Stevens wants to do. And I think we saw that with Isaiah Thomas. It's a perfect fit. He can shoot. Rondo can't shoot. It's as simple as that, really. So for them,
explain how.
look at the percentages.
Yeah.
Well, even to be fair, Rondo is a slightly better mid-range shooter than he gets credit for, but that's a different conversation. But fact is, yeah, you're right. They got a first-round pick that could potentially be the number 8 pick. I think it's top 7 protected. So if Dallas isn't doing well, maybe they end up in the lottery. Maybe the Celtics don't get that pick if they end up in the top 7. But maybe they do, and then suddenly they could have, hypothetically, they could have a top 5 pick from Brooklyn. They could have the number 9 or number 10 pick from Dallas, and they could have their own first-round pick. And that's all, you know, partially from the Rondo trade in last December.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And also, the Isaiah Thomas trade was a coup. I mean, they traded a pick that is top 10 protected from Cleveland. You know, that's probably going to be – Cleveland may not have as good of a regular season record due to all the injuries, but that's clearly going to be in the 20s. And to get Thomas, who has been awesome for them and on an amazing contract as well for that, was also pretty incredible.
Yeah, the interesting thing is a lot of people talk about how the Celtics didn't make a big splash this summer, which is true. But Danny Ainge said at one point, it might have been after Isaiah Thomas was acquired during the year, that he could have waited for the summer to make that move, but it was something that he felt like he had to make then at that moment because, you know, Steve Volpet of the Boston Herald had a great article about how deep down inside maybe Ainge wishes that they had fell into the lottery and got Justice Winslow. But the fact is they got Thomas when they had to get him, because if they waited, they may not have gotten him. Another team might have stepped up and offered better than Marcus Thornton and a protected Cleveland first round pick. I mean, we saw what Thomas could do at the end of last season. I don't know if people realize how much the Celtics used him. He was fifth in the league in usage percentage after the All-Star break. That's in the league of guys like James Harden, LeBron James, LaMarcus Aldridge, and he was pretty efficient doing it too with a 49.6 effective field goal percentage. So it's not like he was a superstar. He wasn't scoring like Russell Westbrook, but on a per-minute basis, he was doing what they needed. He was excelling in the pick and roll, and they got their guy. And in my opinion, that was their big splash for the year, even though it came in February and not in the summer.
What about the criticism that he just dominates the ball too much? I think maybe that fit in a little bit better with the Celtics because they didn't have as many scorers as Phoenix did or even as Sacramento did with Cousins. But do you think that's something that could be a little bit of a detriment for him going forward as some of the young guys on this team mature?
Sure. I know. I think yesterday you might have tweeted something about Isaiah Thomas could annoy his teammates anymore if he sped up in the pick and roll. I think you tweeted that, right?
Yeah, that's right. He got an isolation against some completely overmatched big men, which he eventually blew by for a layup. But, you know, he danced around for 5 seconds at midcourt, just like, you know, kind of showing him up and doing a bunch of unnecessary behind the backs, like before he started it. And I was thinking, like, yeah, just if he just went faster and did all the exact same things, that maybe like it wouldn't be so annoying to his teammates. But it's kind of an ancillary point, frankly, I think.
Yeah, I can see your point though, because that was somewhat of a problem for him with Phoenix and Sacramento. I guess Sacramento was a different situation, but Boston, they've enabled him to do that. I think, again, his usage may not be as high as it was last year, but something, again, I think it was Ainge mentioned this, they don't want Thomas playing, you know, 33, 34 minutes a game because they want to get everything they can out of him in like 27 or 28 minutes per game. So if he's playing about half the game or a little bit more than half of the game with a super high usage percentage that you only see from superstars, maybe it's okay if you're getting somewhat of a ball hog type of player in fewer minutes instead of having that hurting you over a 36, 37-minute period. The fact is he was efficient, and they were really bad in the pick-and-roll last year before they got him. And he was in the 91st percentile in pick-and-roll efficiency, according to Synergy, after the break with the Celtics. So I think he fills a need, even though he may not be perfect quite yet.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens to it. It may become untenable for him to play like that once they get someone who's better than him, but I don't know that they really have that yet, and they probably won't throughout the course of this year unless they can kind of aggregate some of these assets and some of the players on the roster to make a big move. Let's talk about the offseason a little bit. They picked up Amir Johnson on a 2-year, $24 million deal. Second year is non-guaranteed with a July 3rd, I think, guarantee date for next year. Jarebko, similar with $5 million this year, $5 million non-guaranteed next year. They re-signed him. Crowder, obviously, is still in the fold now for another 5 years at what should be a value contract. And then, of course, there was the David Lee trade. You know, why don't we start with the Johnson signing? What's your opinion on that? How is he going to fit in?
I like it for, A, because of the contract. I think it's a great contract. 2 years, 24, second year non-guaranteed, as you said. If he has a good year, could be the type of thing where you don't pick up the option and you can use him as a filler in a trade in the draft or before free agency. I forget the trigger date. I think it's July 4th, July 5th, around that date. So they have time to flip him before they make their decision on him. But as a player, looking at this season.
Yeah, or see if you can just sign somebody better than him and then waive him.
Exactly.
I think they're going to be looking at about $17-18 million in cap space if they retain Jarebko and he, and then that goes up to like $35 million. And there are obviously a few more variables too that I think they could get up to like $40 million if they decided to try to like really make the big score next summer.
Exactly. And I mean, it's funny we talk about Johnson as an asset before we do as a player. And he's actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was unintentional. Yeah, I actually think he's pretty good.
But he's actually, yeah. I think he could be an impactful player for the Celtics this year. Like Crowder, he's the type of guy who brings energy to the floor, and I think he gives them a second positional rim protector. He's not so much a shot blocker anymore, but he's a guy that can play positional defense. I think he's been vocal so far during games, so they need that. And he can hit threes. He's got one of the slowest releases.
That looked good.
Yeah, but he can hit them. And if the Celtics are able to space the floor, he could hit at least 36 or 37% from three. And that's immediately an upgrade over a guy like Bass, who can't hit the above the break three. And plus, Johnson can drive closeouts. He's an effective pick and roll finisher, so pairing him with Isaiah Thomas or Evan Turner can be very effective as a two-way player. And of course, for him, it boils down to health because he has his historically chronic ankle sprains. So if they can keep that under control, whether it's resting him on back-to-backs or limiting his minutes, which they may have to do anyway, then maybe they can sustain his effectiveness over the course of the year, which I think is key for him.
He looked awesome in that game against the Nets. Granted, was being guarded by Brooke Lopez a lot of the time, but Thomas is so good at engaging the big defender in the pick and roll, even when he gets iced, that then they're able to throw it back to the top for Johnson. He hit a couple of threes, then Brooke Lopez had to lumber out there, and he just blew right by him for a couple of layups. It really looked pretty good, and also I think he provides a level of rim protection that was kind of missing on this team last year, though maybe Tyler Zeller's a little bit underrated in that facet. Then there's the David Lee trade. I mean, Jarebko, I don't think we need to talk about him as much, and same thing with Crowder. But the Lee trade, I will be honest, made almost no sense to me. They have Kelly Olynyk already at that position as a guy who is going to be a third-year player that I think they need to get a full evaluation on to determine what they want to do as far as extending him. They already had Johnson as well. Sullinger, maybe, you know, you could be excused for not having him in the plans with some of the injury and weight problems he's had, but still a guy who's been effective at times, if not, you know, maybe a starter quality player. But most importantly, I just don't think Lee is that good anymore. You know, he can play pick and roll, and that's really about it as far as what his above average skills are these days. And he kills your spacing, defensive rebounding at the four. So I really didn't get why they'd bring him in. I think Olynyk, although he is probably not quite as skilled as Lee, is a better player due to his ability to shoot threes and probably having a little more mobility. I really didn't get it, and it's starting to look like Lee is going to start for them now with him, the stature that he has and the salary and all that. What do you think of my criticisms of the move?
You know, it's interesting because I kind of felt the same way as you initially. I wasn't sure about the move. It seemed like an unnecessary move, something that was blocking the development of Olynyk. It made you wonder, hey, are they going to move one of these guys before the season? But watching him play in preseason, I think he looks pretty good offensively. You're right about the criticisms of his game. He can't hit threes. He's not very good defensively. However, I think he provides a second playmaker on the team aside from Isaiah Thomas, because Stevens has used Lee as somewhat of a point forward when Thomas is off the floor, and so much of the offense has been running through Lee from the high post with dribble handoffs, pick and rolls, etc. So he could put up a lot of numbers if he's starting or if he's playing at least 24 or 25 minutes per game. And I think in terms of him being washed up now, not necessarily your criticisms, but some things I read about him, I think there's a lot that's misunderstood about what happened last year. It's not that he stunk and Draymond Green took his job. It's that he got hurt and Draymond Green took his job, and he appears to be healthy now, and he doesn't have the verticality that he did in his prime, but he does resemble kind of the player that was an 18-9 player 2 years ago.
I think he stunk last year, and that's from watching him up close. Now, I will say that he really did not fit into what the Warriors wanted to do with Steve Kerr, because they need spacing from their four, but I think there are a ton of teams, and the Celtics are one, that when they have Olynyk in the game or when they are going with Jarebko at the four. I think even Jarebko is a better option than Lee is, frankly, because, again, of his ability to space the floor. Lee always is going to look good when he has the ball in his hands, when he's directly involved in the pick and roll. The problem is just that when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he is someone who can be helped off of, and his I don't know if he's been hitting any jump shots. The Lee three-pointer was rumored for 5 years out here, and it never actually happened. Mm-hmm. So and also just defensively, I think, is the greater issue, where if you want to switch stuff, it's not going to look good. I'm also still I'm a little disappointed at the shape that Lee is in. Like, he put on some weight when he had that hamstring injury you talked about out here, and he hasn't really shed it yet. Like, he can look a lot more cut, and he kind of just is not looking that way from a body composition standpoint. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that while he does good stuff with the ball in his hands, like, literally every other part of his game is pretty deficient, and that the little thing – you know, because, like, when Olynyk doesn't have the ball, it doesn't necessarily show up in his own stats that he's providing some spacing. But I think that when you look at the fact that he's just pulling his man out to the three-point line, it opens things up so much for others that he is a better offensive player than Lee in terms of his team impact, if not his skills. And then pretty much anyone is going to be a better defensive player than Lee.
Sure, and you made an interesting point about Jarebko, and one of the Celtics' best combinations on the floor last year actually involved Jarebko, and that's because they were able to switch everything defensively. And 325 minutes last year, Crowder and Jarebko had a plus 14 net rating and a defensive rating of only 95. And really, basically any unit featuring those two was highly productive. So, for example, Jarebko, Crowder, Marcus Smart, and Isaiah Thomas played about 100 minutes together, and they had a 125 offensive rating to a 92 defensive rating. And obviously Thomas isn't a good defender, but Crowder, Smart, and Jarebko were able to switch on everything. And that's something you lose.
Smart is tough. Like, Smart is tough. He can battle with four men if they need to, and Jarebko is quick enough to guard two sometimes.
Yeah, I think Smart, honestly, is one of the best young perimeter defenders I've seen in my time watching basketball. For a rookie, I thought he was sensational. I don't think it really shows in the stats, but watching him play, his ability to defend ones, twos, many threes, especially with teams going small, he's relentless defensively. He's really a joy to watch.
So since we're on the topic, what do you think, how do you think the big rotation will shake out, and how do you think it should shake out?
You know, I'd like to see Stevens adapt some type of rotation. The Celtics have a lot of back-to-backs this year. I think it's the second most back-to-backs in the league. So with Amir Johnson with his bad ankles and David Lee at 32, maybe you go game to game, and some games, like if you need to spread the floor or if you need to play small, you give Olynyk more minutes. If it's the type of situation where it's the first game of back-to-back and you want to play Lee heavy minutes, you go with that. But I think generally I'd prefer to see them kind of go the Spurs route, where everybody's playing between 18 and 25 minutes per game, and less on a game-to-game basis, the guy's excelling. If Olynyk is killing it, you give him the ball, you feed him the ball, you extend his minutes, he's out there at the end of games. But it's going to be tough. Stevens has said multiple times, ever since he became coach of the Celtics, he prefers four bigs. And last year there was a time when he had a role with five. And this year there's five guys that deserve minutes. Some would argue someone doesn't. I would say that he probably does. So there's five guys at the big position that deserve minutes. So it's going to be tough, but putting them between 18 and 24 minutes per game, it should alleviate any problems.
So, and you're leaving Sullinger out of that equation then, completely?
Well, yeah, if everybody's between 18 and 24, sure. But if you're giving guys a night off, I mean, if Lee gets a night off or Johnson needs to rest, then sure, Sullinger might play the fewest games of anybody, but if he's playing a quarter of the games, or a third of the games, 30 to 40 games, then I think you're in good shape.
Yeah, and Crowder even could play some four as well, although I'm not sure that they have the wing depth necessarily to where you would want to push him down to the four, because you're kind of bringing guys in who maybe are not guys that you want getting big minutes. What about the rest of the rotation. I will say this. I thought in the playoffs, Stevens' player usage infuriated me a little bit because I felt like Evan Turner just got way, way too much time trying to guard LeBron James. I thought that Crowder is a guy who's just clearly better than him. And so that was, I thought, really could have been better done. And I can't remember. I think there was another one in the front court, too, that I kind of thought they could have done better with. I think maybe it was playing like the Zeller-Olynyk combination a lot, although I don't remember. Was there anything that jumped out for you in the front court about how he was using guys in the playoffs?
Yeah, I would have liked to see them pull Mozgov out of the paint a little bit more. And that kind of relates to your point about this year, Lee not being able to do something like that, whereas Olynyk, Johnson, Jarebko, Crowder all can do that if they're playing small. And getting back to something you said about putting Crowder at the four, kind of weakening the depth at the wing position, that's true. The Celtics don't have a lot of true wings. They have Crowder, who arguably is a wing, and that's really about it. I don't think James Young's ready. So if you're putting Crowder at the four, you're putting Smart at the three, and that could complicate things, depending on the matchup, depending on the team. So I think with the front court depth, one of the problems is they won't be able to play small as often. Jarebko is going to be playing more of the three. He won't be playing the four.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. I'm indifferent about it. I think there's some advantages that he loses. He won't be able to blow past the big. He played center sometimes last year.
I mean, and that was actually a very effective lineup in one of the games that I was at in Boston against the Warriors when they blew out to like a 26-point lead. They were doing that with him at center, even. And I thought that's, especially against second units when there isn't a post-up threat, it actually like worked pretty good.
Yeah, it did, surprisingly. I asked Jarebko about that at media day, and he kind of laughed. and he said to me, you know, I might not have the size of a center, but I make up for it and hustle. And that's one of the things I'm sure you saw at the game. I don't know, I remember the game exactly, but he tips a lot of balls. He gets to a lot of loose balls and tips them out to his teammates. He does the little things that a lot of teams would like to have in a player. I think that's why Celtics fans have really grown to love him so quickly.
Yeah, and at the three, I just think that so much of his skills are muted where, all right, you know, he's just probably an average three-point shooter for a small forward, whereas at the four or in the front court, then he becomes someone that you have to get out on a little bit more. He's not going to be able to go by anybody at the three, as you mentioned. And I think he's probably a below average defender for the three with his lateral quickness. And so just it's like, all right. And they've been playing in there in preseason. Maybe they won't, you know, you don't want to draw too much conclusions from preseason rotations necessarily, but playing him at the three, just because, hey, he's a pretty good player. You know, let's see if you get him on the floor at the three. I've said this on other podcasts. The whole reason that he's a good player is because he can hold up at the four and has all these kind of proto three skills, but he's not really good enough at those skills to be a three. So you're taking away all of his positive impact when you're trying to play him on the wing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he shot 40% on catch and shoot threes last year, and that's partially because he was playing the four or the five at times. So it'll be interesting to see if he sustains that percentage playing the three, because you're right, he's not going to be pulling bigs out of the paint anymore. He's going to be having small forwards on him. They're going to be helping off him. They're not going to have a big who needs to roll all the way down at the paint. So I do think his effectiveness could hurt a little bit this year, but I'm not ready to jump the gun on that because so much of what the Celtics do is just pace and space offensively.
Yeah.
I wonder if his role might not change as much as we think just because of the position.
Yeah, and maybe you'd rather see him at the three than Evan Turner. Although I mean, what's your opinion on Turner? You know, he had what some would have termed a bounce back year last year. He does provide some modicum of playmaking, which last year they probably needed to some extent. I don't think that he's more than an average defender. I think he got totally cooked by LeBron in the playoffs, and he doesn't. You know, he's not really a guy who can shoot from three, and you know he's really pretty much contested to is about all the shot that he can get working in the pick and roll even. So I haven't liked him. Am I being too hard on him?
I don't think you're being too hard on him. But I was one of the few people last year, maybe around this time last year, that wrote that Turner could have a good situation in Boston because Brad Stevens said that they're going to put the ball in his hands and they're going to make him point guard. And I thought he would do a good job at that, and I think he did. He did kind of have a bounce back year, but the weaknesses are still true. And I think that's one of my concerns with him heading into this year for multiple reasons. I wrote an article on Celtics blog about how, A, he's blocking the minutes distribution for guys like Marcus Smart, RJ Hunter, guys who probably deserve some time. But if Turner's getting 18, 20, maybe 25 minutes per game like he did last season, then I think he's blocking guys that can, in my opinion, help the team more.
Yeah, and his upside is so much lower, mm-hmm. too. I think if you're at the point where you feel like you need to play him 25, 30 minutes a game, that means that you're just it's not working out with the other playmakers on the roster.
Yeah, sure, and I think Stevens likes him a lot because he, believe it or not, is somewhat reliable playing point guard. He's good with the ball in his hands. I don't think he's great, but he's, whether for better or for worse, he's one of the better pick-and-roll playmakers on the team, which probably to people outside of Boston hearing that, they're like, oh, Turner, he's horrible. And he was horrible in Indiana and towards the end in Philly. But in his role, he's not bad. He's not good defensively, but he can switch, and there's value in that. Even if he's not super effective, I think being able to switch onto smaller players and defend some larger players does have value. But I don't like him playing 20 to 25 minutes per game this year like I did last year. And I just worry that maybe at some point, you're right, that it's going to be at the point where they're going to feel like they just need to play him. And it's going to be blocking other guys like RJ Hunter, who can help the Celtics from behind the three-point line. They were 27th on three-point percentage last year. And Hunter, I think, is a guy who can help there immediately, even if he's only playing 8 minutes a game.
Yeah, and that's the other problem with Turner is when he doesn't have the ball in his hand, he's a huge liability because mm-hmm. you can help off him. He can hit from the corners on threes, but above the break, he's not as much of a threat. He kind of shoots this line drive with weird form, and so it's not really, I think, something that you want to be featuring with him too much, because he's just not explosive enough with the ball in his hands to where there's a ton of upside. Now, we have mentioned twice now this idea that there isn't necessarily enough playmaking on the team other than Thomas, to where Turner might be needed, Lee might be needed. My hope is that Marcus Smart can fill that deficit. Do you not feel that way?
No, I think Smart definitely could improve offensively. At the end of last year, I thought his pick and roll timing got better. He got better passing out of the pick and roll. He started using hesitations, which is something he didn't do at the beginning of the year. He's just going full speed. So I think that's encouraging. He carried that over to Summer League. Good sign. He started to add a floater, which I think could be very good for him. But at the same time, it boils back down to Turner. I wonder, Brad Stevens and every NBA coach, they're in win now mode. So even if Smart is improved, does Stevens feel that he's a better option to run the point than Turner? Because Smart's a better off-ball shooter than Turner is. He shot pretty well off the catch last year.
Yeah, it was a really weird year, rookie year for Smart, because coming out of Oklahoma State, everyone felt like the one thing he can do is get to the basket and finish in pick and roll. That's all he did at Oklahoma State, and his jumper was a huge question mark. He really improved his form a lot. I mean, I know that you wrote about this more extensively, and I think you know more about kind of shooting mechanics than I do, but I noticed that, he was able to get his left thumb off the ball, so he's not kind of flicking with his left thumb, and he was really, very fastidious about keeping that hand straight, and I thought that was a big part of improving his shooting. I never would have thought that he would be the level of shooter that he was last year, especially because he takes some really difficult attempts from three. But he also basically just never drove to the basket. Maybe some of that was an artifact of a really bad ankle injury that he had early on that maybe hurt his confidence, or he just wasn't the same until halfway through the year. But, what do you think of that?
Yeah, Smart did say at media day that the ankle injury was worse than the team let on and worse than he let on. So, sure, maybe that is part of the reason he wasn't driving to the basket. But I honestly think it's partially just because of his development. Watching him play again at the beginning of the year, he was going full speed. He wasn't changing pace. He wasn't using any hesitation moves at the beginning of the year. But at the end of the year, he was starting to incorporate it into his game, but it wasn't the type of thing where they needed him to do it. They had Turner running point. They had Isaiah Thomas running point. So Smart was really the third ball handler, maybe the fourth if you want to consider Bradley as a half-court ball handler, considering he was used so much. So, it was nice to see him do it in the summer league. Again, I just don't know if it's going to be there during the year, but the important thing is, like you said, he can shoot off the catch, and as long as he can sustain that, I think he has a role offensively, and he should improve.
Do you think his shooting might regress?
It's possible. I mean, last year, a small sample size, it's very possible that it could. But he does hit a lot of clutch shots, a lot of big shots, contested shots. It's not like he's just hitting wide-open jumpers, right? So I think it would be one thing if his percentages were significantly higher on open jumpers, but I don't have them in front of me, but I'm fairly certain they're pretty close on contested and uncontested jumpers. But sure, it could still regress.
Yeah, that's something that we probably need more of a sample on, and since we only have 2 years of the sport view data to determine whether contested shooting or open shooting is more prone to variation. I would actually guess, just my hypothesis would be, that contested shooting is more prone to variation. And that was one of the things that I thought about D'Angelo Russell coming out of college. I mean, this wasn't sport view, but on guarded jumpers on Synergy, he actually shot a really, really good percentage, and I worry that that might be a little fluky and a sign that his shooting might be fluky. But that's for another day, I guess. Mm-hmm. So give me your I guess one more thing, too. So Sherrod Blakely reported that Lee and Zeller are probably going to be the starters, and then it'll be Johnson and Olynyk as the main guys coming off the bench. Those will kind of be the four primary bigs. What do you think of that?
I mean, I don't know if Lee and Zeller will be the starters, but I do think those could be the combinations. And simply because, we don't want to buy too much into coach speak, what a coach says. But Stevens makes a good point when he says they want to surround Isaiah Thomas with shooters, and your best shooting bigs are Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. So if you're having Isaiah Thomas come off the bench, I think it only makes sense to have those two guys paired with him for the majority of the time Thomas is on the floor. So that means Lee starting will be kind of your point forward. He'll be your primary half-court ball handler from the high post. They're going to facilitate a lot of the offense through him. Then Thomas will come in, and he'll make heavy use of the pick and roll, the pick and pop with guys like Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. So I think it's likely those guys will be paired together, Lee and Zeller, and Johnson and Olynyk, but I'm not 100% sure if that will be the starting lineup.
How good is Zeller?
I think he's better than people think. I think people kind of, he's entering his fourth year in the league, but his second year in Cleveland, in my opinion, is just forget about it, honestly. I think last year, in many ways, was his second year of development. And I think he did a good job. I thought defensively he's better than he gets credit for. He's very good positionally. He's not going to block shots. He's not going to make highlight plays. But he is typically in the right position, and sometimes that's all you can ask for. Not everybody can have a dominant shot blocker or a dominant rim protector. And offensively, he's very good for mid-range. He was one of the best mid-range shooters from 15-plus feet last year. So there's some value there. He claims he's extended his I might have read a report. I forget if he said it, but he may start shooting corner threes this year, so we'll see if that's incorporated. And he's a very good screen setter, very good rolling down the lane in the pick and roll, very good passer, very good instincts. I think Zeller is one of those good glue guys. He's maybe not a championship starting center, but he's the type of guy who I think a lot of teams would like to have in their big man rotation.
Yeah, when I talked about the Dan Feldman and Danny LaRue and I did a mock extension podcast where we kind of tried to figure out what guys were worth, and I thought I had the exact same reaction about Zeller, that if he is your starting center and you want to have a really good team, you're probably looking for an upgrade, and that complicates what you want to pay him, especially because if he's coming off the bench, which I ultimately think is the role that he should be in just based on what his talent level is, that it's really hard to justify paying him eight figures. But on the other hand, it seems like that might be where the extension negotiations are going. So I would guess maybe that they don't get done if that's the type of money that he's asking for. But, you know, 4 years, $40 million would be kind of like the top end of his range to me. And I do think he's underrated because he's one of these guys who isn't fantastic at any one thing. He was a top five in field goal percentage in the league, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But he's also really good at running the floor for a center, going back to his North Carolina days where they played with a ton of pace. So I don't know. I still think that I see your point about the combinations, but I think you just want to get your best players on the floor more. And to me, Johnson and Olynyk is by far the best combination of those guys. I think that those two guys are the two best players out of that group, or certainly have the potential to be the two best players out of that group, and that they should start, just because otherwise you're just wasting time at the start of each half on a combination that's not your best, and it's just hard to get those combinations as many minutes as you want to when it's not actually starting.
I agree with you. If I were Coach Stevens, I would start Johnson and Olynyk at power forward and center. I think those two should be starting. I think Isaiah Thomas should probably be in the starting lineup. And maybe those are the guys that finish most games for you. And to your point about Zeller's contract, I agree right now, today, 4 years, $40 million is about as high as I would go. Maybe I'd be willing to go to 11 or 12 per. But with the rising salary cap, $10 million won't be what it once was. So for a rotational big like Zeller, that could become the norm or close to the norm for a guy of his level.
Yeah, I mean, but the problem is because he can't shift to the four, you're really limited to playing him maybe 20 minutes a game at the most if you have a center who is superior than him, which right. You're kind of going to need. But then paying him $10 million kind of eats into your budget for getting a center who is superior to him. And if you think of $15 million as average starter money, I don't think he will ever really be average starter at center. He's pretty old already. I think he's 26 because he came out of college
later. He'll be
26
this year.
Yeah, and when you consider that, he's really, you have to get a discount to and an extension over what you would probably get on the open market, because you're taking on performance risk, you're taking on injury risk if you're the team. And so, yeah, I think that once you kind of do that equation, start at $15 million, subtract his performance from an average starter, subtract more for the fact that you are locking in early and taking on that performance and injury risk, and I think $10 million even might be pushing it slightly, as far as I'm concerned, for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, especially when you consider so many teams are going small, and the Celtics have guys that enables them to go small. So if you're locking yourself into Tyler Zeller, there could be nights where he's playing 12 minutes for you, where he's playing a half for you, where he's playing only two shifts, 12 minutes per game for a stretch against a lot of teams that are going small. I mean, if Stevens has a night where he needs to go small, where Crowder needs to play the four and Jarepko needs to play a five like last year, then that eliminates Zeller from the equation on those specific nights. And there were games last year when he didn't play very much. But there were also games where he played a lot, where he played 25 to 30 minutes a game. So
yeah, and last year he was the best rim protector they had, which isn't saying much. But now that they have Johnson, I think that's less of a concern, to where, like, all right, we're getting carved up at the basket, we got to get someone in. I think that's Johnson more than it's Zeller this year.
You're right, and I agree with that. At the same time, though, it raises the question, are either of these guys going to be your long-term center? Because I don't think it'll be Amir Johnson. At 28 years old, he's an old 28 with his ankles.
Yeah.
And Zeller at 26 this year, if you sign him to a four-year contract, I don't think he's your long-term starter. But maybe he's your fourth big. But the question the Celtics have to ask themselves is this the guy we want to commit ourselves to as our third or fourth big in the rotation? And I'm not sure. It's hard to answer that question. It depends on how he develops this year, which is why I'd personally rather wait until after the year to sign an extension.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine, too, that he's going to play as much as he played last year with all these other guys. So it's not necessarily the case that he's going to be bargaining from more of a position of strength next summer than he is right now. And I think that Dan Feldman made that point as well, that he thinks his value is going to kind of go down a little bit. So what is your crunch time lineup for this team?
You know, I'd say on most nights, Isaiah Thomas is going to have to be on the floor. I think he's your best playmaker. He's your best scorer. And I think Drake Crowder is going to have to be out there. I think he's your best defender. He can switch many pick and rolls. He can switch at the end of shot clocks onto bigs or smalls. So I think those two are locked in there. And other than that, it's really hard to commit. I'd say most nights, Amir Johnson might be out there, or Kelly Olynyk, because of their ability to space the floor and the fact Johnson can protect the rim. He can play both ends. But if it's Bradley, if it's Smart, it's really hard for me to commit because it depends on a night-to-night basis. And, you know, it's funny, Stevens, a lot of people talk about him. He has a reputation as an analytical head coach, but he rolls with the hot hand a lot. He goes with his gut when he makes decisions. So I think it's going to change night-to-night depending on who's hot, depending on who's cold, depending on the matchup.
You don't have Marcus Smart in there as an automatic?
Not necessarily. I mean, if Bradley's lighting it up from three on a certain night, then sure, I think Stevens may roll with him. But, yeah, most nights, I think Smart will be out there. But I'm not ready to commit to him on a guaranteed basis.
Do you think that Smart has star potential?
It's interesting, the 538 Carmelo projection machine that was released recently had his top comparison as James Harden. And obviously that's not a player-to-player comparison. They're different players. But in terms of overall impact, I don't think he can quite reach that level when you consider how important scoring is and what Harden gives you. So I was a little surprised to see that comparison on there. But if you factor in defense, then sure, I think he can become a star defender. I think he could reach a Tony Allen type of level defensively. And with better offense, the question is just how good can he become offensively? And a lot of that boils down to his ability to get to the rim, draw fouls, because I'm not convinced that he's going to be a guy that can, you know, drain shots on a nightly basis. He's kind of a streaky shooter. But if he can get to the line and if he can hit free throws, then sure, I think he could become an all-star. Maybe not quite a star, but sure, I think he could be an all-star someday.
Okay, yeah, I guess it all depends to what your definition of star and superstar
is. Sure, yeah.
I mean, I sort of think of it as star, all-star, superstar is sort of my hierarchy, but that's total semantics. I mean, but yeah, as someone who, I think that's right. I think he can compete to kind of be a lower-rung all-star guy. I think that this also is a very important season for the Celtics with the cap space and the flexibility that they're going to have over the next 2 years to really look like a good free agent destination. I think that the two ways that they can do that is, one, make Smart start to look like he's a big star or a star in the making, and two, win a ton of games this year. You know, if they get into the high 40s, if they can get to like the 5 seed or something, then a 5 seed that has, up to $40 million in cap space, that's actually like potentially a destination to be feared. You know, I don't think that they're going to be in the Durant sweepstakes or, necessarily even Al Horford or Mike Conley. But, I think that then they might be able to kind of get to the point where they're getting their pick of the litter for kind of the rung below that. Granted, that may not be the greatest rung. But still, I mean, this is an important year to use the flexibility that they have the next 2 summers by making themselves an attractive destination.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's partially the logic behind acquiring Amir Johnson and David Lee, because they want to present themselves as an appealing option to free agents or to players through trades. If a player is in a situation where he can essentially pick his destination, they want to be able to say, hey, look what we did with 32-year-old David Lee and an aging Amir Johnson. Imagine what we can do with you. They want to be able to put themselves in that position with the development of Smart, with the progression of Isaiah Thomas. Granted, he's, I think, 26 now. He can still get better. They want to be able to say to these players, look what we can do with these guys. Now imagine what we can do with you. So sure, I think with all the cap space, with the bazillion draft picks they have at their disposal, I think they'll be in a position next summer, if they have a good season, to make an impactful move.
What do you see as the big strengths for this team?
I'd say probably their versatility, if they choose to use it. I mentioned earlier the Crowder-Jarepko lineup, how effective that was with Smart being able to switch pick and rolls. I think.
Yeah, I would see actually them closing with Johnson, Crowder, and Jarebko in the front court. I might even like that better than Olynyk at times, just due to the switching as well. And for people who say, all right, Jarebko's not as good of a player, I agree with you. In a vacuum, he's not as good as Lee. He's not as good as Kelly Olynyk. And he's probably maybe not even as good as Zeller. But just because of the fact that he can switch in to that system that you're talking about, where they can just, the whole system of switching works better, maybe he is a better fit with some of these lineups, but I don't know. It's I guess that's what Stevens is going to have to sort out.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that's a very good point, especially in end-of-game situations when a lot of teams switch at the end of shot clocks, at the shot clock. So, yeah, sure, I think Jarebko could be an option at the end of games, especially if they're playing offense, defense, if they're making substitutions. But, yeah, I'd say their versatility. But the question is will they be able to use it the same way they did last year? And right now the answer is no, because they're not going to be able to use their wings like Crowder and Jarebko at the big positions as much as they did last season. However, maybe they plan on using Amir Johnson in switches. I'm not convinced that he'll be able to do it. I don't think he can do it as well as he did when he was younger, before his ankles were more of a problem, before his agility was sapped as much as it has been now. But I still think they're going to try to retain that versatility just in a different way. They're going to try to switch probably off-ball screens a lot with their guards, with their wings. You're probably going to see Crowder defending some smalls. And I think that translates offensively too. Something I asked Crowder about at media day was, you know, when he played power forward, he was able to beat bigs with his speed. But now he's going to be beating smaller players with his size and his strength. Maybe if he's an effective shooter, it translates into more at-rim opportunities, more free throws, which is something they really lacked at times last year.
Is it possible that Crowder's shooting is going to regress a little? What did he shoot, like 35% last year? He might have even been lower than that.
No.
He's always kind of he was a non-shooter coming out of college. It's kind of – it seems a little dicey to me. I have some worry that he could – fall back enough from three to where he like might become a lot less playable.
No, his 3-point percentage did regress with the Celtics last year from where it was with Dallas. I think he shot 28%. I have it up somewhere. Pretty sure it was 28% from three. And he actually mentioned this year, he said, I'm never going to shoot that low of a percentage again. And he did appear to make some revisions to his shooting form. Very subtle. It seems like it's a little bit more compact, a little bit less going on. He's not necessarily this is a bad thing, but maybe for him mechanically it is. He's not leaping forward as much as he did last year. He's kind of staying a little bit more close to the ground. And maybe mechanically his coaches saw something there that was creating problems in terms of his range. But, you know, if he's shooting effectively, then sure, maybe he experiences an uptick. However, I don't know if he'll shoot worse than he did last year with the Celtics. He did well with Dallas,
yeah.
But he did shoot 28.2% from three with the Celtics, which isn't very
good. Yeah, that's right. I forgot that he had kind of regressed. And maybe that's why Stevens was a bit more loath to play him in the playoffs than I might have liked. But, I mean, it's still a lot of it, too, is just simply being enough of a threat to be respected out there, even if it's not necessarily hitting those shots. So you talked about the versatility as a strength. Is there anything else in particular you would point to?
I'd say their depth, their ability to, kind of like we talked about earlier, they have a lot of bigs. I think if an injury hurts, if David Lee gets hurt, I think they have the ability to play more guys, more minutes. So I don't think they're in a position where there's any injury other than an injury to Isaiah Thomas that would really kill them this year. So I think they have depth in the sense that on a night-to-night basis, they can play different styles. They can play whatever really way they want. They can match teams by going small, or they can go big and make teams match up to them. So I think a combination of their versatility and their depth allows them to adapt to different teams and play different styles. And I think that's, over the course of an 82-game season, an important thing to have.
Yeah, I think that that is really important when you're looking at projecting them. Because I think that there are not that many injuries that could fail them. I think Crowder is someone who is really, really important as well. I just don't think that Evan Turner is a good enough option at the three, and those are really the only two true threes on the roster. So that might be another issue. And Turner even is kind of more of a two in some ways. Defensively, he's not really like that strong to hold it. You know, if you're using him to guard like Carmelo Anthony or something, or LeBron, you're in trouble. Yeah. How about from a weaknesses standpoint?
Celtics weaknesses. I would say most likely for them, it's going to be their lack of a premier second scorer. And they have Thomas last year, but there were points when Thomas was off the floor that they were just anemic offensively. And we saw what happened in the playoffs against Cleveland when they completely took Thomas away with Iman Shumpert. They were unable to get any baskets when they needed them. They were unable to generate offense. Their pick and roll evaporated everything that worked during the season. They weren't able to get downhill in the pick and roll. So I think they need a guy to step up into that role. Maybe it's David Lee, but he, as we talked about, is really only effective in pick and roll situations or dump offs.
Yeah, for Celtics fans who like want to see them go to Lee in the post, I'm here to tell you that is not going to work against all but the weakest opposing matchups.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And they kind of have gone to Lee a little bit early on in the preseason. They didn't do it much last night against the Knicks, but in the first two games they did. And I'm not the biggest fan of it. I think it is something they're going to try to do. They're gonna try to feed him in the post kind of and let him be a playmaker from that area, especially from the high post. But again, I don't know if he's really that guy. What they really need is Smart to take that jump up to the next level so he can be a guy they can rely on to draw fouls, get to the lane, kick it out to their many shooters. But it's really hard to look at this team and say they have a guy, if Thomas is taken away, that can take the load on offense. So that's definitely a weakness, especially in a playoff situation. Not as much during the regular season, but in the playoffs that can hurt them.
Yeah, and Shumpert was unbelievable. Unreal. On him last year. And maybe the hope is that if Smart can take another leap and you've got him and Thomas, then the other team's not going to have two guys who are going to be able to take both of those guys away completely, and they'll have to kind of pick their poison. But yeah, I mean, we have no idea whether Smart is going to get to that point. I am optimistic based on his summer league performance. I thought he looked awesome in summer league. So I have always been pretty high on Smart. I think the statistical translations love him. Even offensively, I think that he can take a leap this year. Now, what are the key questions that you're going to be monitoring for this team throughout the season as sort of a bellwether of whether they're going to fulfill expectations or maybe fall a little bit short?
One thing I'm interested to see is kind of Olynyk's usage. I thought for Team Canada, they enabled him to be the man. He wasn't really the top scorer, but he was one of the guys they facilitated offense through.
Yeah, and he played center.
Yeah, and he was really effective. And I think it's important for him to be enabled. I think we've seen him over the past couple of years kind of fade away, and it's partially due to his mindset.
Yeah, and the best way to enable him is by trading for someone who makes $15 million at his position and is going to start over him, right?
Yeah,
and isn't as good as he is. That's a great way to enable him.
That's for sure. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if he starts, if they give him the starting role, as we mentioned, next to Amir Johnson, that could be what he needs to really take the next step up. Because I think it's important for him to. We've talked so much over this podcast about how good he is in theory. And I think if he's hitting threes at a high percent, that enables him to be one of the few seven-footers in the NBA that can drive closeouts and kick it out like he can. I mean, he played point guard in high school. He was a late bloomer, a late grower. So I think a Linux development is something I'll be monitoring throughout the year, but especially his usage and how they're using him, whether it's his minutes, his usage on the court, his shot attempts, things like that I'm going to be watching closely.
What did he shoot from three last year?
I think it was around 36%. I'll pull that up.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, once you're getting above
34.9%.
Okay. Yeah, so the hope would be, I think, that he can get that into the 36-37 range. And then once you're getting to that level as a true big, then I think you really got something. It's interesting. I think it's even possible to me Olynyk's best offensive position, to me for sure, is center. I think he's probably too slow, ideally, to be playing the four on defense, although that's probably something that I think he's going to have to do because they have so many centers. But he also probably doesn't really protect the rim well enough and maybe doesn't defensive rebound well enough to be a true center. What do you think about him if you're just in a vacuum without considering any of the other guys? What is his best position?
I mean, it depends on the system. The Celtics offensively, what they do with their centers and forwards is the same on offense, and it's generally the same on defense. And that's something Stevens will say to every media member who asks him about centers or power forwards. He'll always ramble on about, well, they're the same thing in our offense. Don't pay attention.
Yeah, I don't buy that because it's just you still have to guard someone on defense. And the other team's four is much more likely to be someone who can shoot threes and attack off the dribble. And so that just means that your role defensively is going to be different. If you're guarding the center, you're a lot closer to the basket. If you're guarding the power forward, you're out on the perimeter more.
No doubt. In a vacuum, you're right. And I agree with you, you know, to your point there. Yes, center is certainly a better position for him defensively because of his agility on defense. I think he's gotten better defensively, but he's obviously not quick enough where you can comfortably rely on him to step out and defend fours. He's much better when he's icing pick and rolls and he's playing positionally against a rolling big.
Is his rim protection as terrible as you would kind of think it is?
I don't think it's as terrible as people would assume. It's not good by any means, but I'd say it's somewhere around average. He's not going to block shots, but he typically is in the position where you want him to be, and that's saying a lot considering the fact his rookie year, he was kind of a revolving door in the pick and roll and off ball to two. He's improved a lot from year one to year two. It was impressive, and you can't say the same about a guy like Solinger who – entering year four now, he's not at the level where Olynyk is. I think Olynyk's progression is very impressive. I think his body has gotten a little bit better this year. It's subtle, but he seems a little bit more defined, so maybe he'll be a little bit stronger this year, ability to handle larger players. So entering year three, I think he could develop a little bit more defensively, and we may see that.
Yeah, he does have quick feet, and that is something that if you just have a big body and you can move your feet, the impact that simply doing that and then just jumping with your arms up can have is a little bit underrated. He does have the really short wingspan for his size. It was funny. You're like, oh, he was a late bloomer in terms of his growth. And I was sort of like thinking, oh, well, I guess his arms like never grew at all. I mean, that's being a little, I think he has like, you know, a 6'11 wingspan for like his 7 foot height. So it's not ridiculously bad. And his standing reach is probably still, you know, because he's so tall isn't that bad, but yeah, I think he could be okay, and you know, I would like to see them try it out with him at center a little bit, but I don't think we're going to see that much. And that gets to my key question, which is just, is Stevens going to use all these guys correctly? And you know, as you could probably tell throughout the course of this podcast, with all the carping I've been doing, I have some theories on how those guys should be used. As it turns out, during the year, maybe that'll be wrong. You know, he is there, but so I don't want to say that using them the way I think they should be used is, you know, the be-all, end-all. But finding combinations that work with these guys, with some of these guys having certain strengths, especially defensively, spacing-wise, I would default to using those guys more than I would guys like Zeller, guys like Lee. You know, I think Johnson, Olynyk, Jarebko, those are the guys that I would like to see used more. You know, Crowder over Turner. Those sorts of things. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. And I worry that if he doesn't find the right combinations, this team could be a little bit of a disappointment. But I am very high on them if those guys are used correctly.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I think early in the year, we're going to see a lot of those traditional pairings at power forward and center. But as the year shakes out, I don't think Stevens will be afraid to bench a guy. Because, look, this is a deep team. Some guys aren't going to play. So if it turns out that Zeller just isn't working, if there's really no combination on the floor that works with him, or if it turns out that the David Lee experiment is a disaster, maybe they end up...
I don't know, man. It's really hard for me to see them benching Lee just because I think that would be a big problem in the locker room.
Of
He's
course.
Making a lot of money. they traded for him. He's been a starter his whole career. It was one thing when, like, he was on a 67-win team and he couldn't complain because they were killing everybody. You know, the Celtics aren't going to be doing that this year. And then Lee also is going to be a free agent next year. I'm sure he'll be worried about his value. I could see that that could go south pretty quickly playing. And that's why another reason I hated the trade is just because of the optics, you feel compelled to play the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not saying they would bench him entirely. You can't do that. But that presents another problem, and related to Turner especially. He's a free agent next year too. So you have a lot of guys with a lot of money on the table that could conceivably earn themselves a large contract. I mean, David Lee at 32 years old, if he has a really good year, if he averages 18 and 10 again, it's not out of the question for him to get a three-year, $30 million deal, or even 4 years, 40, considering all the money on the table. So if you're David Lee, you don't want to get benched. So I think one of my other key questions is, if Stevens is in a position where a guy isn't being effective, how do you manage that, and how do you manage the personalities, which could be disgruntled in the locker room this year, because you don't want that, especially on a team that could win games somewhere in the 40s. They're not going to win 60-plus games like the Warriors, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Sullinger is another guy, yep, too, who's coming up on free agency. He's probably not even going to be in the rotation, and he is can be sullen, Sullinger.
He might be sulky. Sullinger. He actually, last year, he mentioned a few times after some tough losses early in the year about how it's hard in this locker room because every guy was kind of a star in college, and everybody has to accept their role. And he said something along the lines of, you know, we can't have guys be taking hero shots, something like that. And
yeah. Didn't he complain about, like, not getting enough touches at one point?
I forget. I think he might have alluded to something about that. It might have been the same post-game media timeout I'm referring to, where he said something along those lines. But from what I recall, it was something about how everybody on the team was a star in high school, a star in college, and how they all had to accept their roles. And he was trying to step up and be a leader. But, yeah, I mean, he's a guy, free agent to be. If he has a good year, he could earn himself a nice long-term contract, but he might not get that chance. And it's going to be interesting to see how Stevens manages these guys and how the players manage each other, because that's important, especially for a young team.
All right, give me your prediction. Predicted record, and then we'll do best case, worst case.
Well, Vegas set their over-under at 42.5. I'd go over on that. I'd probably give them.
Yeah, about, I love that over.
Yeah, it's
even if they don't necessarily get the player usage thing quite down. I mean, I think they'll be over.
Me too. I'd give them maybe 48 wins. I think they have a lot of positive factors going for them. They're deep, as we've discussed. They have pieces that fit well. They have a lot of draft picks, a lot of young tradable player assets. So that could put them in a position to make an impactful move during the season. An Isaiah Thomas level type of deal. So if they are able to do something like that, maybe they reach 50 wins. Maybe that gets them the extra boost towards the end of the year. But realistically, I'd say 47, 48 wins, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, and although I've been making fun of all my guests for going over, I think everyone but one has done that now. In this particular case, I am in agreement with you. I think, you know, 46, 47, and I could even see them getting into the low 50s, especially if Smart can develop, if they can get a bounce-back year from Amir Johnson. And one of the reasons that I am high on this team, you know, I do believe in Stevens overall as a coach. I've been worried about his player usage, but, I mean, the fact that he got this team to defend at the level that they did last year was unbelievable when you consider the talent on hand that they had at the big positions. Now he has more talent at the big positions. You know, he's got Crowder as well for a full season, which I think is really going to help. So I think that their defense, it would be very surprising if they weren't improved. I think they were like 13th, 14th last year. You know, they could maybe just, I guess they are going to be missing Darren Erman, which will hurt them. You know, the great defensive assistant, but I could see them getting kind of lower end top 10 with the team. What'd they finish in offense last year by points per possession?
I think it was around 13th by the end of the year.
Yeah, so I think they could improve with that too. And just if you look at what they did when Thomas came over, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to replicate that over the course of an entire season. Maybe they got a little lucky. I don't expect them to go 55 and 27, you know, to mirror the 14-7 that they did when he was there. But I think that they are going to look pretty good. They don't have that much injury risk. And I also think they have so many young guys or guys that you would think could be better than you think that enough of them are going to hit that then hopefully they will get the playing time and you're going to you have more of a chance to improve just because of that. So, yeah, I like 47. I think that low 50s is not at all out of the question for this team.
I agree. Just pulled up the stats now. They were 23rd in offensive rating before the Isaiah Thomas trade, and after it they were 16th. So subtle improvement, but having Thomas for a full season now, being better defensively, maybe they're better in transition this year, which they had a high rate of transition last year. They're one of the most frequent transition teams last year, but their efficiency wasn't good. Those little things could all add up, help their offense while maintaining their improved defense under Stevens. And yeah, sure, I think the low 50s for win totals is certainly within reach for them.
Yeah, think of all the guys on this team that should be better. Smart, Bradley, Crowder, I think even Amir Johnson, if he's healthier. Jerebko will probably be about the same. Zeller is still at an age where he can improve. Olynyk could take a little bit of a leap as well. So all those guys, and even Thomas, you know, he's getting into his prime. He is at an age where he still might improve a little bit too. And you don't really have that many regression candidates on this team. So that's a reason, I think, to be high on them.
I agree with you. There's just a lot of guys at the right age where they're entering their primes. I mean, Avery Bradley is only 24 years old. He's in his sixth year in the league, I think. I mean, this year, the hope is that he shoots more threes, which means less dribble handoffs into the mid-range jumper this year. So if he's shooting more corner threes and he's shooting at a better rate from above the break, yeah, he's the type of guy who could really surprise a lot of people who only casually see the Celtics or really don't watch him at all. So I think Bradley's especially a guy that we haven't talked about much that could take a step up offensively. And it's interesting that if he was one of the highest usage players outside of Isaiah Thomas in the second half last year, but maybe if he takes a little dip in the totem pole and usage, maybe he's able to gear it up on defense, which is something that has kind of regressed a little bit in recent years because he's been taking such a heavier load on offense. And he said that he wants to be named to the all-defensive team, and he's not the type of guy that really talks himself up. He's a quiet kid. So if he takes that step up on defense, hey, those little things, they all add up.
Yeah, he did the Steph flyby, which so many people are incorporating now, where they fake a three and then step to the side and shoot a three instead of stepping in for a long two, which is something that he did a lot last year. That might be something that could just add to his game a little bit as well. What do you think is the worst case scenario for this team, you know, barring massive injuries, and how does that occur?
I think it's easy. I think it's if Isaiah Thomas is a bust and he fails to replicate what he did last season. I mean, look, he was a stud at the end of the last year, at the end of the season, considering how much they used him and how efficient he was. But the fact is, without Thomas, the Celtics had a 99.3 offensive rating after the break. Before the break, it was only 101. So the Celtics need to get development from other players, and a lot of development, if Thomas isn't as good as he was last year. So they need him to replicate what he did or be better.
Yeah, and if he's not, then you're going to see a lot of David Lee, and I think if you see a lot of David Lee, you're going to see the defense regress quite a bit. So that's another concern. Yeah, I could see them 40 and 42 would probably be like my downside for this team, especially with all the depth that they have and the good coaching. It would be hard for me to see them being much worse than that.
I agree with you. I don't think their range is quite as wide as it may be as other teams. I think they're still a pretty solid team. They're maybe a 8 seed and maybe the 9th or 10th if they just miss out on the playoffs at worst. So they have a lot of talent. They're deep, even if Thomas does stink. But if he's not, they could win 50 games, so we'll see.
So you mentioned R.J. Hunter. He's looked good in the preseason. It seems like Rozier and James Young are going to be pretty much out of the rotation, but you seem to think Hunter can be in it, despite the fact that he was drafted lower than either of those guys. What has he been looking like in preseason?
Well, Hunter's been terrific. I think RJ's defense was his biggest question coming out of college, and rightfully so. He's lanky. He played zone at Georgia State, but he's picking up concepts quite nicely. I think his footwork has improved, especially when he contests closeouts. Little things like that are what earn him minutes, and that's why I think he's playing ahead of a guy like James Young. I think Stevens likes him. He has super high basketball IQ, and it's funny to me. I mean, everybody tweets during games like, wow, didn't know RJ Hunter could pass like that. And it's like, hey, he was doing that at Georgia State too.
Yeah. His Draft Express scouting video was very clear.
Yeah, I mean, his dad said in an interview that RJ might be a better passer than he is a shooter, and I felt the same way. So when he said that, I laughed to myself because it's true. He may be a better passer than he is a shooter. I mean, his vision for a rookie shooting guard is really, really good. Granted, I mean, I don't want to compare him to proven NBA players, but for a rookie, it's elite for rookies at his position.
Yeah.
And you don't see guys nail pocket passes off screens like he does or be able to fill space off ball. Little things like that are what earn you minutes and earn you an opportunity. And I think so far he's taking advantage. And whether or not he earns a role on a nightly basis, well, that remains to be seen. But at the least, I think Stevens could give him a Gigi Datome type of role. And what Gigi did last year was he would come in for a six-minute stretch. And if he was hitting shots, if he was playing solid on defense, Stevens would give him more minutes. He'd extend him in the second half. So maybe if the Celtics are desperate for offense, if they need someone to
spread the floor, they need a pure shooter on this team. That is the one thing that they really don't have. As you noted, that their three-point shooting was not really that great last year.
Yeah, they were 27th in three-point percentage last year, and they didn't really have a guy that can just space, hit threes from anywhere. And RJ could be the type of guy who can do that. Especially, I mean, you consider the fact that, I mean, he shot only 30.5% from three last year from Georgia State. That's for multiple reasons. Partially due to his usage. He was taking a lot of shots that you shouldn't take because of his role on that team. And I don't think he'll be taking those shots for the Celtics this year. And if he is, he'll find himself on the bench. But he won't be doing that because of his high basketball IQ. So, yeah, he could be a guy that they use off ball to spread the floor or maybe run some actions for him after timeouts.
Yeah, and, I don't know how good is his handle? Is he someone who could run, a straight high pick and roll up top? I don't quite see him as that level of guy, but maybe as someone who, as you said, coming off a down screen and then curling if the defense is behind him and then finding the guy on a pocket pass who just screened for him, rolling to the basket is something that he's pretty solid at. Because a lot of times the big, if he gets open on that screen, is going to have to step out on him because he'll drain the shot.
Yeah, you mentioned him playing, in the pick and roll. One of the things I wrote about before the draft was, down the line, maybe RJ's the type of guy that can play a little bit of point guard for you. I don't know if he'll ever be at the level with his handle where he can play it full-time, but maybe in his rookie year, depending on the other players on the floor, maybe at the end of a shot clock, he can handle a pick and roll. But I don't know if he's the type of guy where you want him running point yet. I mean, last night, Stevens actually used him at point guard and didn't really go too well. He did okay for his first experience doing it in live NBA action, but it wasn't what you need from a point guard in today's NBA. You'd get eaten alive at this point. But he can do it down the line.
Yeah, and he can't really get to the basket and finish very well either. So, and I don't know that that's ever really going to be kind of a major part of his game. All right, well, so let's wrap this up here. Is there anything else that you are thinking about with this team? Any major observations you had that we didn't get a chance to get to?
Sure. I think one of the overlooked aspects of the Celtics, this season, in season, and something I alluded to a little bit ago, is their ability to make a move during the year. They have a weakness. Last year it was their pick and roll. I think if an opportunity is there, they're a team that could be in a position to fix it. And that's why I'm optimistic for their win projection, because I think, Danny Ainge, their front office, they have the pieces where if something needs fixing, they'll be one of the teams that can call up any team and say, hey, we have what you need. We're a match. Let's make a deal. And those opportunities could come. They may not come. But every year, teams trade, teams sell. So I think there's someone to watch for, starting in January, especially towards the trade deadline, that they could make a move that really takes them to the next level. Not championship contender, but maybe a team that goes to the second or third round of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah, I don't see them quite having enough top-line talent to get past some of those better teams. I think they'll probably – they could maybe be the four seed depending on the type of luck that some of those Miami, Chicago, Washington, Toronto – I think that those teams look a little bit better to me than the Celtics do due to their top-line talent, definitely in a playoff situation, but that maybe one or two of those teams could be injured or disappoint. And like I said, the Celtics, I think, are a more consistent option over the course of the regular season. So maybe they could sneak into the four seed. I'm thinking more kind of fifth or sixth seed. And, you know, I think they're still out in the first round. I don't see them beating any of those teams unless those teams really regress, just because once you get into a playoff situation, as we saw last year against the Cavs as well, that they just, when the stars start playing a lot more minutes, that it's just hard for the Celtics to keep up due to the lack of top-line talent.
Yeah, exactly. They definitely need that second score. And I guess that's kind of my point, is maybe they get it, maybe they don't. But if they do get it, I think they're that team to watch for, especially making a second-half surge up the Eastern Conference standings. But we'll see. That's a wild card, but it's something definitely to watch for.
Yeah, I mean, is there anyone in particular that you think could be a good target, a guy who's on an ending contract or could be disgruntled or something like that, or are we kind of too early to say?
Too early to say. I don't really have anybody in mind. It's hard to predict.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it'd be interesting, too, just to see which of the young guys are improving, what they're actually even going to need. It's probably even too early to say that, perhaps. All right, well, thanks so much for coming on. Give us some plugs.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin O'Connor NBA. Write for a couple different sites, Celtics Blog, Vantage Sports. Do a couple things with my boss at Sports Aptitude for Draft Express. So yeah, write for a couple different sites.
Yeah, and obviously we're a little early for this, but your draft guide is also one of the must reads when we get to there. You really follow the draft extremely closely, so that's another thing you should definitely check out of Kevin's. As for me, follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA. My Facebook page also, if you like that, you can keep up with the writing, the podcast. I'll also just every once in a while, if I watch a bunch of games that night, I'll write up like some quick observations on the Facebook page as well. So that's a good way catch all to follow everything. If you want to support the podcast, an iTunes rating or ranking, always really appreciate it. That's been instrumental in helping us get the sponsorship and listenership that we've had so far, so we really appreciate that. The cap space codes on DraftKings or on SeatGeek, another great way to support the podcast as well. And if you want to just tell a friend about us or share on social media, that's another great way to support the podcast as well. And we appreciate that. We appreciate our great guests like Kevin for coming on, and we will talk to you all next time.